Welcome to the Money Lab Live Podcast, episode number 82, the You Don't Deserve to Get Paid for Fun Money Story. Welcome back to another live broadcast of the Money Lab podcast from the Six Figure Academy. I am your host, Wei Hong, from the Six Figure Academy. And for those of you who've been watching over the since the beginning, per se, you've seen the different changes in our background and everything. And yes, last week I did say that it was the last time we're going to do it in the particular office at the Six Figure Academy because we've opened up a whole separate location. And supposedly today we're supposed to be in that new studio space, except we have no internet there yet. It's that new. So guess what we're doing it? We're doing it in the home studio in my home where we have a sound studio dedicated just for these types of moments. So this is the podcast, just in case you didn't know, where we give you tips, strategies, and interviews with other entrepreneurs on how to create that ultimate six-figure entrepreneurial lifestyle free of bad money stories, money anxiety, and stress so that you can monetize your dreams and execute your genius. Now, if you haven't already downloaded our free book from Money Anxiety to Six-Figure Mastery, make sure you go to go.thesixfigureacademy.com and get it there. It's the perfect complement to all the things we discuss on the show, and quite frankly, it could change your life as it has changed for others. Now, if you're joining us live today and you are not on YouTube Live, what are you doing? Just kidding. Make sure you get on Spreaker.com or download the Spreaker app on your mobile device and search for the hashtag The Money Lab. That's that pound sign for those of you who don't know what hashtag is. Hashtag pound sign The Money Lab, all one word, so that you can join us in the chat room, ask questions, interact with us and our guest. And while you're there, subscribe so that you don't miss an episode and you can catch us every week. For all other ways to find us, go to thesixfigureacademy.com/radio for all the details. And if there's something you love about what you hear in this episode today that you know could help someone you care about, remember, sharing is caring. Share the show to that person. Now, today's episode is being sponsored by the Energy Mind Body Transformational Experience events, which run live, no-pitch, full-day events where the goal is to have that one shift, one transformational experience to help you optimize your energy, mind, and body. Go to www.embte, which is short for Energy Mind Body Transformational Experience, embte.com for more details on the upcoming events. Now, I'm really excited about our show today because we are going to dive deep into the ocean of money and be saved by a financial lifeguard. A few things you want to listen for sure is to basically listen for the times when we start talking about addressing that sense of unworthiness of money. Nobody has that, or nobody's had to deal with that before, right? How to manage money like a boss? Are you disrespecting money? And why it's important to have a prosperity plan? And for those of you who follow me, I talk about prosperity all the time. We get to talk today with someone who is an expert about creating prosperity plans for people. So who is our guest today? Christine Lucan, the financial lifeguard, is a money coach and a speaker just like me, and the author of, well, not the same book as me, but the author of Manage Money Like a Boss, a financial guide for creative entrepreneurs, and Money is Emotional, Prevent Your Heart from Hijacking Your Wallet. Holy cow, that's so awesome. Now, she empowers her clients to rescue their financial dignity by co-creating a prosperity plan, which I just talked about, to decrease debt, increase savings, and direct spending to what's really important to them. There's so much more I would love to share by just reading the bio, but there's no better way to learn about somebody than to actually have them share it live. So, Christine, welcome to the show. Thank you for being on here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a lengthy intro, but I am glad that that you can actually kind of bear me just kind of doing that whole full long intro. We had a chance to talk for about half an hour or so before, and I'm so excited because I think this is the first time we actually spoke about just money in general. And it seems you and I are probably speaking a lot of the same language, same frequency, same vibration, and thus helping people in the same big way. So I'm really excited to have you on here. So you know, let's get that piece out of the way so we can just make this entire show talking about your book, talk about what you do to help people. What is, so this is the Money Lab. And so, you know, the topic or the title of today's show was basically you don't deserve, you know, to get paid for fun. So that has a lot to do with a little bit with the money story that you grew up with, wasn't it?
Yeah. You know, I felt like growing up that making money was hard work. And you had to go to work to make money.
I don't understand why anybody would have that belief.
you know, and that the amount of money that you got was directly proportional to how much effort you put in. Mm. And, you know, my parents were wonderful, loving parents. And I'm sure they thought they were doing a good thing by rewarding hard work. You know, if I got all A's, you know, I would get a certain amount of bonus money, in my allowance.
Right.
So I learned very early, like, pay for performance.
Uh-huh.
But it seemed like, you know, it always had to be hard.
Mm. Was school hard for you? I mean, was it hard to get straight A's for you?
It was not hard for me. I loved school. I was a total nerd. Total nerd.
So that wasn't very hard work then. So it's like, hey, cool. This was easy money.
But it was still like, you know, you have to work for your money.
Right.
And
right. It was an exchange,
you know, there
right?
was always sort of this distrust about, mm-hmm. you know, easy money. You know, mm-hmm. if someone came by money easily, it was, you know, easy come, easy go.
Right.
And, you know, there was always some sort of suspicion around, you know, people who were very wealthy.
Mm. Oh, wow.
You know, really didn't put the time in. You
right.
know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
almost they were getting more than their fair share.
And how do you think your parents define easy money? Because there's so many ways to define that.
Well, I mean, I think like lottery winners
oh,
or,
right.
you know, like something that there was, you know, or if you, you know, if somebody won money mm-hmm. or, you know, maybe if someone got a promotion and somebody felt like, oh, well, they didn't really earn that.
What?
You know, that
or even like an inheritance.
Yes.
Or, wait, they got a promotion. They didn't really earn that. And that's basically now they're judging the promotion, the vibe, the validity
right.
of the promotion. Wow. That sounds like that sounds like an interesting, like a kind of a bad money story running there.
Yeah. I don't think it's uncommon, though.
No, it sounds very common. I mean, it's not. I'm not. None of what you're saying is surprising to me because we hear it all the time. Oh, easy mm-hmm. money is like, oh, you know. And it's so funny when people come into easy money, you don't jump and say, "Wow, good for them." That's not the first reaction most people have.
Yeah.
Right. And I think.
Yeah, and I think even in my business, I felt like I had. Like, it had to be hard work in order for me to make a lot of money.
To justify it.
Rather
that.
Than, yeah. you know, I can bring something of great value
uh-huh.
that is fun and easy for me to do.
Uh-huh.
And I do deserve to get paid for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so you grew up with that perception of that's how things were, and you kind of bought into it for a little bit. At what point did you realize that something needed to shift around that? In other words, you know, most people when they grow up with those type of limiting belief money stories, there's either a catharsis that happens or just a well thought out strategy. It's like, okay, now I'm grown up, I'm gonna proactively work on myself to release that. What was it with for you that how that shift happened?
Well, I think a good part of it was I hired a business coach. And
you know that audience? Hire a business coach.
And you know, she worked a lot with me on the money mindset. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, as far as like handling personal finances, I mean, I'm totally golden there. Like
right.
once the income comes in, I got a plan. I know exactly where it's going. I manage it very well. But for some reason, I was having this hang up on earning money in my business. And I love my business. I love helping entrepreneurs
right.
to, you know, learn how to manage their money like a boss and take things to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such amazing, rewarding work. And I would always say, like, oh, I would do this for free. But just because you would do it for free
doesn't mean you have to. I know.
Right. And, you know, it's like, I do deserve to get paid
sure.
to, you know, if one of my coaching clients, I help them pay off, you know, with my guidance. Obviously, they did a lot of the work, but with my
Right.
guidance, they paid off $20,000 worth of debt in
Right.
6 months.
You are saving their financial lives. I mean, that absolutely is of high value, you know? Now, were
Right.
you
Yeah.
always doing this, or were you always an entrepreneur, or?
No, actually, I wasn't. So, I started out working at my family's business, and I honestly thought that I would always work there.
And what
So,
business
my
was
dad
that?
started. So, it's machine tools.
Okay, cool. Power tools or just machine tools?
No, these machines are they're huge. They would fill a whole entire room in your house,
Holy cow.
and it's. You know, these are the types of machines that like GE and Boeing are using to cut engine blocks
Oh,
for the
CNC machines.
airplanes. Yes. Yeah, you know what a CNC machine
Of
is. All
course I
right.
do. I've actually had I actually was went through a little bit of CNC training just to kind of because I was curious. You know,
Yeah.
this is a story of way. He's whatever he's curious about, he'll actually go in there and learn something about it and just learn about the different facets of CNC and like the tech behind it too. It's like fascinating. So cool. You
Yeah.
just cut. It's like modern day like sculpturing but with metal, right?
It is. It is. Yeah. And so, you know, I had a background in accounting, and when an accounting position opened up, my dad said, "Okay, you can apply just like everybody else." And I had to go, you know,
Right.
through the normal channels.
Right.
And so I ended up working there for 13 years
Wow.
and met my husband there.
Oh,
So
cool.
I highly condone dating in the workplace.
Right,
We're
especially.
close. He actually
Exactly.
works for GE right now, so he's actually working on the machine tools that that build the airplane engine. So that's pretty cool.
Wow.
But you know, but right before I started working for my family's business, I crashed and burned financially myself. Despite having an accounting degree. And it was because I had been dating a guy who had terrible money habits. He was in and out of jobs, in and out of jail.
Oh,
Yeah. Yeah,
wow. You know,
and
we
actually,
kind of have to go through that, you know, and be with somebody who's a little bit on the fringe, you know, just to see what it's like to dance with the dark side.
yeah, and you know, if you want to hear my whole tabloid story, if you get my first book, Money is Emotional,
Yeah.
it's pretty much a blend of my saga plus you know, all of the good financial tips for preventing your heart from being hijacked by your wallet, which mine was.
Wow.
But you know, I w while I was working for the family business, I started helping with a financial literacy course that my church was teaching, because you know, I had experienced that pain and frustration and embarrassment
Right.
of going through that whole financial mess. And so I felt like, okay, now that I'm on the other side of it, I want to help other people. And
Right.
so for me, it was just like, oh, this is just my volunteer work. But the more I did it, the more I realized, like, this is my life's work. Like, this is where I can really, you know, positively impact people and change their lives. You know, I mean, was I having a positive impact on my family's business and the employees there? Sure. But not in a way that, and you know how this is with coaching.
Yeah.
When you sit across from someone and you know, you help to facilitate that change, and you just see them grow and blossom
Right.
and step into everything that you know that they can be. It's, you know, it's such rewarding work
Yeah.
that I just got to the point to where I just felt like that job was killing me, you know. And I was making six figures, and I was part owner, so I, you know, I walked away from from a big paycheck to take this risk of starting my financial coaching business, which a lot of entrepreneurs, they go through that as well. You know,
Right.
you gotta step off the ledge
Right. Step off
at
that
some
ledge and take that leap of faith, right?
point. Yes.
Right. And in your particular case, let God be your wings and say, okay, great. Have that fit that level of faith. And you know, and that's a big thing that when it comes to entrepreneurship is, you know, whatever the spiritual practice that you have, it's almost a kind of like the magic glue that helps keep it all together. You know,
Yes.
not to take this too far into the spirituality realm, but that's really what a lot of people kind of distinguish between, okay, what's the difference between me and the next person that has basically been able to survive these trials and tribulation of what it takes to become an entrepreneur? You know, I don't care what anybody says, entrepreneurship is fun. And it's not the easiest thing in the world. I mean, I go in front of these large groups sometimes and I say, you know, first and foremost, how many of you are entrepreneurs in this room? Everybody raises their hand. Usually it's in a room full of entrepreneurs. I say, okay, let me tell you, first and foremost, y'all are crazy. Because nobody in their right mind would ever want to like say, I want to be an entrepreneur without realizing at first, if you knew what it took right from the get-go in the very beginning, all that it would take, all the tears and the toil and the trials and tribulations to take to become successful, you may think twice. Most people do think twice, right?
Right.
And then yet we do it. And I think there's that level of faith and that in your spiritual practice, whatever that may be, right, to kind of help keep that all together for you. So I think the fact that you had such, you know, your church and your congregation, that helped a lot, I'm sure, in helping you just say, okay, I'm going to make this very scary leap, but I'm supported on some level and on level beyond just financial, right?
Yes. Yeah. And when you feel like, you know, this is my mission, like this is why God put me here, you know, it is to empower as many people as possible to rescue their financial dignity.
Yeah.
Then, you know, that gives you that drive to say, yeah, this is going to be hard, but it's going to be worth it.
Yeah. And it's so funny. You use the word financial dignity, you know.
Yes.
How are you defining financial dignity? Because it's so interesting. I think everybody defines it a little bit differently, depending on how one defines dignity, right?
Right. Well, and the numbers can be vastly different depending on the person or the couple that we're talking about. So my definition of financial dignity is when you wake up in the morning and you feel really good about where you are financially, that's financial dignity.
Right. Right.
You know, when there's, you feel like I'm in a good place, you know, maybe that means you're a millionaire, maybe it doesn't.
Right.
But what it means is that money stress is not running your life.
Right.
That's really what it means.
Yeah. And what do you say to people, those clients that show up and they don't even, that's such a foreign concept that they've always woken up with some kind of not happy with where they're at financially, you know?
Yeah. Well, I lived that. I lived that for 7 years.
Right. I mean, you mean before you went to the family business or?
Yeah. Right. When I was with my ex-fiance that, yes, I mean, I lived that every single day.
Right.
You know, and I tell them, hey, it's baby steps.
Right.
It's baby steps. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my goal, especially in the first and second coaching sessions with people, is to figure out what their biggest pain point is.
Right.
And offer them something that's going to give them at least a little bit of relief in that particular area. So, you know, like some money gurus, I don't have like this list of 7 or 8 things that we do in a particular order.
Right.
Because I feel like if you can give people some relief there.
Right.
And you know, their level of money stress and embarrassment and shame starts to drop.
Right.
Then that really gets them engaged and bought into the process.
Right. And they can see more too. Cause you know, sometimes when you're so swathed with pain, you can't even see the light that you're supposed to be focusing on because there's just so much pain going on around the whole financial side of things. Right.
Yeah.
So when you got out of that relationship and you went in and went into the family business and applied and got in, did that help bring some of that financial dignity back? Or did it have you recuperate completely, or was there still more? I mean, obviously it was something that was more that, you know, helped you make that leap to go step away from a corporate job that was paying you well.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I first went to the family business, the first thing my dad did was he sat down with me and he said, okay, you need a plan to get your finances back in order. Mm-hmm. You know, and I say that he was my financial lifeguard. And even though I was an accountant, I knew how to do a budget.
Right.
I was so emotional about my own mess. I really needed somebody else to kind of hold my hand and say, do this first and then do this. And then we'll meet again next week. You know, I really needed somebody to
babysit. And your dad did that to you.
Yeah.
Did that for you.
He was the one that babysat me through that process. And, you know, once I had gotten away from that negative relationship, things improved pretty rapidly.
Right.
And, you know, the other thing I will say is I went and got counseling because I knew that money was just one of the symptoms of the dysfunction that's going on there. So I tell people that there is no shame in that.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of times it's not just about the money. There's some other issue going on underneath the surface. And sometimes you do need, you know, to seek professional help to make sure that you've healed the roots of that issue.
I love that you say that, because that's basically the work that I do. I mean, people say, oh, you work with my budget and everything. As I could. That's not really the reason why you're in this mess, right? Because you can Google the solution. You can Google a budget, and you'll have some amazing content out there for it. But why won't you implement it?
Right.
That's what we get to. Like I love that you use the word root, getting to that cause of it all and addressing it from there. So very cool. So you actually had the wherewithal. Did you just decide that on your own, that you would go get counseling? Or did it was just something like your dad said, you know, maybe you should look into that? Or
Well, you know, I knew that it was a benefit that was offered by the company.
Oh,
nice. And, you know, this was probably about 6 months after I had left my relationship, and my now husband was expressing an interest in dating me. And I thought, I don't even know what a healthy relationship looks like. Right. I better get myself straight.
Right.
You know, because he seems like a nice guy and I don't want him to be the rebound guy.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
And that was very smart of me to do that. So, and my husband has always been very good with money. He's an engineer, so he's not someone that's given to emotional spending.
Right.
He's one of those people where whether he spends with a credit card or cash or debit card, he's already thoroughly researched the purchase and he knows this is the best value.
Right.
And, you know, that's probably only 10 or 15% of the population who are like that. But
because I'm an engineer and I spend emotionally all the time. And my solution is, well, I just got to go make more money. So let's just go make more money. So okay, cool. So now you went through all that, and what do you think was the shift that finally kind of like the linchpin that clicked, that helped you kind of go, oh, this is what it means to be prosperous. This is what it means to be in that prosperity groove of success. You know.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, it was probably about, you know, a year or two after I had left that relationship, and I remember driving to work and it occurred to me that I couldn't remember the last time I worried about money. And that was a complete and total shock to me, because like I said, I was that person who would be laying in bed trying to balance my account and make sure, you know, after I pay the car payment and the rent, was there going to be anything left for groceries?
Right.
You know, and I wasn't even out of debt at that point, but I had my plan. I was working my plan. I was seeing tangible progress, and I wasn't living paycheck to paycheck for once.
Yeah, and that must have been. And it when you lifted your head up and realized that's what was going on, it wasn't like it had already been going on for a while. You had just just been going in that direction. One day you just said, "Oh wait, this is a totally different me."
Yeah, right? And that was really when I decided I wanted to help people.
Right.
With that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And how long did it take for you to lift your head and realize that? Was it like 10 years or 5 years or?
It was only about a year after I left that relationship, because it was.
So it can happen really quickly for people.
It can.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I jokingly say I had like a boat anchor.
Right.
You know, with my ex-fiance. So I lovingly call him Jeff, which is not his real name.
Right.
But that was kind of how I felt. It was like I felt like I was trying to swim across the lake and he was hanging on to my leg.
Right.
You know, like I could make some good progress if he was swimming next to me.
Sure.
But he wasn't, you know, and I basically told him, I got to kick you off.
Yeah. Yeah.
I use that exact analogy. I'm like, I'm going to drown if I don't. and what, you know, whether you sink or swim is up to you, but I can't do this anymore.
Right.
And
Do you know what his money story was by chance, or what was
yeah,
driving him?
I do. You know, he was raised by a single mother, and they came from a very poverty mindset. And I actually talk about the story and Money is Emotional, that they really bought into the whole, you know, money's evil, the whole, you know, you don't rise above what your family's doing, you know. So I remember when he had gotten a new job and a company truck, and so we went to his family's Christmas, and his uncle jokingly said, "Oh, look at you with the company truck moving up in the world. You know, pretty soon you'll be too good to come see us in the trailer park."
Oh, wow.
I swear, within 3 months, maybe not even that long, he got a DUI in that truck and lost the job.
And so he's back in the trailer park, so that way he doesn't not go back to his family.
So here's the funny thing. Last I heard, now this was a long time ago, I heard that he was living in a trailer next to his mom in the trailer park.
Oh,
So my husband says, "I know you love me so much because you could have been queen of the trailer park if you had stayed with that
oh no. Oh. Yeah, well, I mean, there's something to be said. If you're queen of the trailer and you raise the financial circumstances of the trailer park up so everybody graduates out of the trailer, that'd be good. That'd be some good queen work.
Yes.
Is it something you would want to do? Probably not. Oh my goodness. So do you think any of your money story had to do, and you know, that you had to deal with your, you know, and why you were in the relationship like that was, you know, have anything to do with what you help people with around unworthiness or any of those types of things around money?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there can be kind of two things at play. One is codependency, and that is someone who is a giver with no boundaries. And you know, it's great to be a giver, but you and I were talking about this before we went
Yes.
live, that
And you
you
recommended a book that I have already ordered.
That was fast.
Yeah, it's called what, Give and Take?
Yeah, Give and Take by Adam Grant.
Adam Grant, yeah.
And in that book, he talks about what a healthy giver looks like and what a boundaryless, you know, self-sacrificing giver looks like. And
I wonder if that self-sacrificing giver is actually more selfish than the boundary structured giver.
yeah, I don't know.
Because it must be
But I
serving something else beyond just giving if you're just like giving until you completely collapse and just destroy your
yeah.
own life. Martyr, I call it martyrism, like financial martyrism.
It is. Yes. Yeah, and that's essentially what I was in my previous relationship. You know, I thought I could save him. And it was funny because it was actually my CPA. He's like, "Oh," he's like, "you had a savior complex." And I was like, "What?" I'm like,
Savior
"No,
complex.
I
Wow. Yeah.
was like, "No, I don't." And he's like, "Yes, you did." He's like, "You thought you could save him." And I was like, "Oh my God, you're right." And I do think some people get their sense of importance from that.
Right.
But when you try to save someone from the consequences of their money mistakes, they will never learn,
and
and you will have to do it.
again and again and again. You know, and it's such it, you know, with all my students and clients, and it's such a common story. Because of the work that I do, I tend to attract a lot of very heart-centered, conscious people who truly want to make an impact on the planet. And so many times when it comes to money, they bought into the different stories that if they're doing here to do good, they shouldn't, you know, they would do it for free. And just like we were talking about before, and they really shouldn't, you know. And the responsibility is, I love what you said before we started this with about the responsibility of something. If you have a gift and you're helping, you're doing good on the planet. What was it that you said that was really, really important?
It was a quote from Manage Money Like a Boss in the chapter called "We're Not Worthy." And I say, you know, it's easier to stay broke and complain about the state of the world than it is to get rich and put your money where your mouth is. Because if you say, "I don't deserve money," you're rejecting your power to change the world for the better. And, you know, like it or not, money and power are part of our society today.
Yeah.
Yes, you can change the world without money. However, money is like a megaphone.
It's like a lubricant, right?
Yes. And, you know, if you have money and you have a healthy relationship with money, the more money you have, the more that amplifies the good that you want to do in the world.
Right.
You know, if you're broke, you can't buy all organic, naturally sourced, responsibly produced clothing.
Right.
You can't afford to do that if you're broke.
Right.
And so people don't think about it that way. You know, it's right. like if you're financially healthy and yes, even financially wealthy, then, you know, you get to support socially conscious businesses, environmentally responsible businesses. You have a lot more money to support causes that are doing good in the world,
right.
those things that are really important to you.
Right. And if you still want to complain, having money will make your voice louder. Give you an option to make a louder voice. You can complain louder and complain bigger if you still want to complain with the money that you have, right? But if you don't
I
have
wish
money,
you really wouldn't.
Yeah, if you're broke, then it's like complaining from a bottomless pit that you keep falling deeper and deeper into, and nobody's going to hear you because the sound's never going to reach the surface, really, at some point. I love these metaphors.
We could probably go all day, right?
I know. I basically visualize somebody who's falling inside this bottomless financial pit and just complaining about what's wrong with the world and how the world needs to, like, you know, move away from eating, you know, treating animals a certain way, or unconsciously just like destroying the planet. But then nobody hears them because they're not even in the bottom of a pit. They're in the bottom of a bottomless pit, which means they're getting deeper and deeper in there.
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, they can't support those businesses. You know,
they
if you're broke, it's hard to eat organic. If you're broke, it's, you know, it's hard to support all those causes and those environmentally and socially responsible companies if, you know, all you can afford is Taco Bell.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And now you're supporting the people that you are complaining about. And then so what happens is it becomes this vicious cycle, right? And then you're complaining about something. They says, well, why is, you know, organic so expensive? And they're trying to pull these conscious, you know, prosperous organizations into their world so that they could justify. I don't know. It's just this vicious little thing going on. So,
yes.
But I love that. I love that quote from there. And so that's, you know, anybody who gets a chance, we'll have an opportunity at the end to talk about your book and everything so that people know where to get your book, because it sounds like an amazing book already. So now how do you, what's one thing that you can help people that, and there's plenty of people out there who are struggling with the unworthiness, especially in the community where entrepreneurs are looking to change the planet or solve people's problems. They often deal with that unworthiness things. What are one of the first things that you help clients that are struggling with that? What do you help them do? I mean, what's one thing? I don't want you to give away the farm or anything, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is a lot of inner work, and for different people, it's different triggers. And so, like you, we delve into people's money stories. And the first place we look is I have people write down what they think and say about money for an entire week. Yes, so we can capture those negative money thoughts, because those will typically point to the money story.
Why just a week? You should do a month, so that, you know, the different payment cycles that come through the month and stuff, like, and see what happens.
That's true. But then what we start doing is we start rewriting those into positives.
Got it.
And I heard somebody recently say, and I honestly don't remember where it was, but they said, you'll never rise above your own image of yourself. So if you have, you know, if you see yourself as like, I can never do any better than this, then you aren't. And, you know, a lot of people love doing meditation. My mind happens to go like 5,000 different directions when I try to meditate. So I do visualization instead.
Right.
So,
which is a form of meditation too.
Yeah. And so what I do is, you know, I spend time thinking about living in my dream house. And
Nice.
I picture myself walking through my dream house, working in my home office, laying by my pool. I visualize Nick and I going on these amazing tropical vacations.
Nice. Where? What's tropical?
Any place where we can snorkel.
Okay,
That's
perfect.
pretty much like my husband's like, if we can snorkel there, then we're good.
Beautiful.
But it's like you have to have that higher vision of yourself.
Right.
And so many people have this poverty mindset, and it's like, I do vision boards with people, and and sometimes it's really hard for them where they're like, everything is a disaster right now. What should I do? And I say, I want you to create your vision board.
Yeah.
I don't want you to change anything right now
Right.
because you have to change what's in your head first before you're ever going to change what's in your wallet.
Yeah, we need to define where we actually want to go. Get clear on that, because most people know where they don't want to go with absolute clarity. They
Right.
just
And then
don't.
they focus on that and they
Exactly.
get more of
It's like, I don't want to fall off the
that.
bike. Stop looking at the ground. What? Boom.
Exactly.
I mean, we learn it as kids, but then we never took that same learning and put, mapped it across to, oh, we can do life the same way. Life is kind of like riding a bike. If you want to learn how to ride a bike, stop looking at the ground, look at to where you want to go.
Yes, absolutely.
I think I
And
just solved the world's problems with that.
yeah, well, and
Wow.
one of the things I tell people, especially because I work with a lot of creatives, is I tell them, go find someone in your field who is succeeding, who is also a good, productive member of society, because a lot of times people will say like, oh, it's all these greedy rich people that are ruining the world. Well, that's not true. I mean, if you think about, I love watching the Ellen show. Ellen DeGeneres gives away so much money. So if you think about like Ellen and Oprah and Bill Gates, and there are plenty of people who, use their wealth and use their celebrity status to do good things. So, I tell people, find someone who can be kind of that virtual mentor to you and to say, you know what, if they could make their living in music, if they could make their living in art, if they could make their living, doing whatever it is that you're doing, then you've got that positive person to look up to.
And so instead of comparing or comparing down, you're actually modeling up, right? You're
Yes.
looking at it and even if you're just observing and studying their story, even if you don't get the whole entire story, there's still elements in there in Gemstone that can start to inspire you on an unconscious level to start making better decisions. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. That's such a cool one. Like I said, you and I talked a lot of the same language, and it's so cool. And people say, well, isn't she going to be like a competitor? I was like, there's so many people out there. We can't possibly reach everyone. And so, and quite frankly, there's not enough of us out there that are doing this type of
No.
work. I don't think, I mean, there are people
Absolutely.
who think budget and financial stuff like that, but to go to that core, to go to the root, to take the time to kind of explore what the emotions are behind it. That's why I like the title of your first book, which is like, heart letting your heart hijack your wallet. That's so relevant. It's such a great title too, actually, by the way. But speaking about your new book, okay, so now your new book is talking about helping people manage their money like a boss. What does that mean? Managing your money like taking the boss role around your money.
Yeah, well, the analogy that I use is, most entrepreneurs have reported to a traditional boss, at least at some time in the past. So I say, think about that last boss that you had, and imagine if after lunch you came back to the office and, you had 3 or 4 hours left before quitting time and you were caught up on everything. So you walk into your boss's office and you're like, hey, Scott, I'm completely caught up with everything you want me to do. What do you got for me? Well, if my former boss, Scott, hid under his desk until I walked away, I would think that that was really weird, right? But here's the thing. A lot of entrepreneurs are hiding from their money. They're ignoring their money. And I tell them, you know what? You don't have to be a former high school mathlete. You don't have to be this numbers genius to spend a small, concentrated amount of time and energy managing your business finances on a weekly and a monthly basis.
Right.
I mean, I probably spend about 15 or 20 minutes a week, and I'm a numbers person. But, there's a lot of great tools out there. There are, some people certainly should get the help of a bookkeeper, but they need to understand enough about their business finances to hold that person accountable and also to understand the information that they're receiving from them to make good business decisions. So I tell people, it's time to stop hiding from your money. It's time to stop ignoring your money. Because money's either going to be your best employee or your worst nightmare. And if you don't manage your money like a boss, you can't be mad if you don't have any.
Because you let the money be your boss, right? So, yeah, I mean, and if you play the role of that hiding boss, then money will just sit there, and it will you can't control what it's going to do, and more often than not, it simply finds another job with somebody else.
Exactly. Well, because if I went into my former boss and he did that to me and I just eventually wandered away because it was awkward, I would probably go and look at cute kitten videos on YouTube or, message people on Facebook,
Yeah,
right?
exactly. And this is where we when we see what people do is this frivolous spending or shopping therapy and everything, and they're buying these widgets and gadgets and what's his name calls doodads. What's his name? Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Kiyosaki,
Oh,
right? He calls them
yes.
doodads, right? Which is things that don't contribute anything to your life. They're temporary, kind of like a fill your void type of thing. And yeah, that's exactly what happens when you hide from your money. A lot of work that we do on our end is says, hey, you need to kind of have that conversation. You need to get real with your money and see what the heck is going on. Your energy needs to be in the money, in order for you to be able to have money support you and what you want to do. Right. So that's so managing money like a boss. So how does someone then stop hiding? How does someone like get out? Like you were saying, 15 to 20 minutes a day. Do they actually sit there and just log into their bank account and just at least look at your ledgers? Little
Yeah,
baby
well,
steps.
for some people, they might need the help of a money coach or a CPA or a bookkeeper to get things in order. So for example, if you've just been flying by the seat of your pants, you might not know where to start. You may need to have someone come in and say, "Let me get you set up on QuickBooks Online. Let me walk you through what all of these things mean and show you how to use this." It's going to be totally worth your money to pay somebody a couple hundred bucks to spend some time with you and get you set up on a system that is easy for you. So, occasionally I will have clients who say, "I need you to help me do this. Will you help get me set up and show me how to use it?" Sure, I can help you do that. I'm not going to go in and like straighten out your QuickBooks, but teaching somebody how to use it and take ownership of that tool, sometimes people need that. But yes, I tell people, just I call it your date with money. Have your appointment with money every week where you go and you look and see what money has come in this week, what bills need to be paid. Do I need to invoice somebody? Sometimes I start coaching business owners and it's like I find out they've like there's a whole bunch of people they need to invoice. And if they invoiced those people and got that money, they wouldn't be in this mess.
So it's just getting a system together. And what do you say to people that once they have it set up, sometimes people don't, they set it up and they think it's a set it, forget it, and they never go back to like the spreadsheet. They never go back to the ledger. They never go back to the QuickBooks Online. And because it's one thing to have it set up, and then it's like, okay, go. Now we have a system set up. It's another thing to say, okay, why aren't you going in there at least 10, 15 minutes a week to kind of check in on it? Even if there's nothing to check in or input, you still check in, right?
Well, and that's why I call it, your date with money or your appointment with money is you put that in your calendar as a recurring appointment.
Got it.
And that is your time that you spend with your accounting numbers, even if it's
I
5 minutes.
love that. I love that. And I think that's a big piece because I always talk about time blocking every little thing in your life, including those types of moments. And so, yeah, very powerful piece. I think that alone could help people kind of like start, owning their money flow again, And now a lot of times, people do that, and despite the best efforts of being the boss of your money, there's something else that sometimes gets in the way, which tends to be what you like to call or you refer to as disrespecting money,
Right.
And despite your best efforts on coordinating everything, you're still sabotaging yourself on some level.
Yeah. And I tell people, think about your relationship with money like you would any other relationship. You need respect, you need honesty, and you need positive attention. So we just talked about the positive attention, and that is actually spending some time with your money. Honesty is really just being honest with yourself about the state of money. And I mean, some people, when we first meet, a lot of times they don't know what their 401k balance is. They don't know exactly how much money they owe. It's important that you're honest with yourself. Where do I stand with my money? But as far as respecting money, I mean, I'm talking about like, are you physically respecting your money? Is your wallet falling apart? Is there spare change and receipts floating all over your car at the bottom of your purse? Do you have a filing system for your receipts and your business paperwork? And it doesn't have to be complicated. I mean, I'm a big fan of like fancy office supplies. So you know what? You can go and buy 12 cool file folders and do one for each month and just put all your January receipts in one, all your February receipts. Yeah, it doesn't have to be super complicated. But so I tell the story in Manage Money Like a Boss of an artist who was hiding from her money. And so this was her filing system. She had a small brown box on her desk that she would
Shoebox.
put, yes, she would put receipts in. When it got full, she would dump it into a garbage bag that she kept in her closet.
No.
Yes. And so, can you imagine the stress come 2 or 3 weeks before tax time, where she would empty this huge garbage
Oh
bag
my
full of
God.
receipts? And then
Oh
she's got to
no.
go through it and make some order out of it to give to her CPA to do taxes.
I don't know if
And it's just
anybody would
like,
want to want to deal with
yeah,
that. Oh my God.
they'd probably be like, I'm going to charge you this much and we're going to file an extension. And then now you have 3 more months to go through all this stuff.
Oh my
But,
God.
she was always dreading that tax time. And I said, all we need to do is get 12 file folders. And for each month, just put your receipts for that month. And when you get your bank statement, whether you print it online or it comes in the mail, you put it with the receipts. Yeah, that takes 10 minutes.
That's it. That's it. It's so simple. And like you were saying, and I love what you're saying, it's like, helping people understand you don't have to do a massive 180 degree shift. You can take baby steps. One little thing at a time, and it
Absolutely.
doesn't cost a lot. It doesn't mean, and you don't have to invest in massive amounts of technology right off the bat. You could use, like you're saying, 12 folders, and each one represents a month.
Well, and I think that's one of the great things about the book is that the chapters are short, and at the end of every chapter, there's a creative money exploration. And that is some kind of activity to apply what you've learned in that chapter to your life and your business. And so there's actually a workbook that people can download for free from my website, where it's got all the room to do all the exercises in there.
Oh, nice. Very cool. So this eventually leads them to helping what you take your clients through, which is creating that prosperity plan, if you will. Right? So what is that? What is the prosperity plan?
Well, I've grown to dislike the word budget
Right.
because a lot of people don't like the
Yeah,
word
budget sucks,
because,
budgets don't work. But a plan works better.
And so, with budget, you think it's like a crash diet. And a prosperity plan is more like a healthy eating plan. And there's actually multiple parts to your prosperity plan. There's your spending plan, which is what people traditionally think of as the budget.
Right.
And really, the spending plan, we can't even really make that spending plan until we have that vision of where we want our life and our business to go.
Sure.
Because that dictates where we spend our money.
Right.
You know, I don't tell people, stop spending money on this. What I do is I show them where they're spending their money now. And then I say, okay, you have said that this stuff is important to you,
right,
but here's what you're spending your money on now. Where do you want to make the shifts so that we can direct more of that spending towards what your goals are? So whether that's a trip to Ireland, or, you know, you want a new building for your business, or, you know, whether it's business, personal, whatever.
Right.
Once people understand what their big goals are, it makes it so much easier for them to shift their spending. And I don't have to even really tell them to do it.
Yeah, they just start doing it on their own once they see it get clear, right?
Yeah, I just point it out and I say, okay, you know, I had a couple that was, they had a couple teenage kids. They were spending $2,000 a month on food between dining out and groceries.
Wow.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, it depends on where you live, right? But yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm in the Midwest, so that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money for the Midwest. Yes.
And so, you know, I basically said, okay, you know, you've said that vacations, you know, the husband wanted a motorcycle, the wife wanted a new car. And I said, you say that that's important to you, but what your current spending is saying to you is that food is really important to you.
Right.
I'm not telling you to stop eating out, but
right.
If we can make an adjustment and decrease that by 30%,
right,
sudden that $600 that you've got freed up for this other goal.
Yeah.
So I'm really more about pointing out what's going on and making people mindful. And then I make suggestions, because I know if they decide to make that change, then they own it.
Right.
And it's going to stick.
Yeah.
Rather than me saying, you need to stop eating out.
Yeah. I mean, for me, food would have been very much part of my. I'm a total foodie. We have family restaurants and everything like that. So it's really interesting. And then when you said 2,000, I was like, well, that's not too bad, because I live in California.
Right. That's a totally different story.
California, 2,000. Ah, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, I could see how that would happen. You know,
yeah.
I don't have a full family with kids and everything. It's right now, Dara's in college, and now I have just me and my dog. I still sometimes spend about a grand, you know, because I love food. I love eating out.
Right.
And, you know, it's so funny. There was one of my favorite sushi places, their second year when they opened, they're just right around the corner from me. And I was like going, wow, you know, I must spend a lot of money here. I finally went over how much money I spent in year two that they were there. $10,000 in one restaurant. I'm like their number one or number two. He says, you're like number one or number two client or customer. I'm like, good. Then you know,
it should be.
But for me,
but you know,
food is.
If that's to you,
yeah. Well, food
is
important
to me.
That's
your decision. You're making that decision.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a massive foodie. Food is really important to me. For me, it's an element of life that incorporates the social component. So yeah, it's an important piece. When I go to different locations and everything like that, so what's good to eat around here?
Right.
When I vacation or travel, food is also important there.
Yeah.
So.
But there's nothing wrong with that. You're consciously making that decision.
Yes,
and
I am.
This couple was. Yeah.
And I'm watching it. I'm keeping track of it too.
Yeah. And so with the prosperity plan, you got your spending plan, your savings plan, and your debt reduction plan. And those three things are working holistically together to get you to that preferred financial destination, which is that vision board that you've created.
Right.
And so, you know, it does look very different for each and every person, couple, and business owner, because it's important for them to get really clear about what does success mean to me.
Right. I might need to have you come in as a guest webinar presenter in our my monthly masterminds that I run in between my prosperity breakthrough programs, because the things that you're sharing here, it takes what I say, but it goes so much deeper on it. Would love to have you actually come in and just talk to our audience there, captive audience of, you know, because they're, you know, I think it'd be extremely valuable. You and I talk the same language, so there's not going to be a lot of, you know, like, huh, you know, questions and stuff like that. And so we can talk about that offline. Not we don't need to talk about that on the air on the radio because our audience may not even care about that right now. So the prosperity plan, I loved how you broke it down. It's like you can't it's not just about a budget, it's about your spending plan, about your savings plan, which is really all of it, and your debt reduction plan, which is really all geared towards the goal of where you actually want to go when it comes to money and how you want money to support your lifestyle, how you want your money to support your business, all those different things, right? I love that. I love how you broke it down to those three simple components so that people say, oh my God, it sounds like a complicated thing. It's not. What you spend, what you save, and your debt reduction, right? Or debt management, per se. Because, you know, I mean, when it comes to business, you're leveraging debt. Ever since, you know, we came off the gold standard, you know, debt becomes a leverageable component of how we grow businesses. I mean, I think every Fortune 50 or 100 company has at least a multi-million dollar credit line that they use to leverage to help them create growth on some level, right? So, but that's a level of intricacy that goes beyond just normal debt reduction or whatever doing debt.
Well, I do talk about business debt in the book and, you know, what's good debt, bad debt. I call them bad and the ugly.
Right. Yeah, and then that's why, you know, before we got in here, I always talk about the ROI. If you have a documentable ROI that you have for your expenditures, that in itself in your business kind of helps out too. Otherwise, if you have no ROI, then you're just spending money for the sake of spending money. And that doesn't do anything or anybody any good.
No.
So I love this. I love having, you know, guests like you on because it's like we're talking shop. There's nothing like about like, there's no, you know, every once in a while it's good to have a little bit of conflict, but you and I, there's no conflict in almost anything in the messaging that I say to my audience, you say to your audience, because it's so very much in alignment. So that's why I was really excited about having you on the show today. So this is the time, I mean, we're almost at the end of the show. Surprisingly, as usual, I know it just flies by. And I want to make sure that because I myself want to kind of like engage with you on a deeper level because, you know, there's all this whole thing about you can't coach yourself no matter what. Right. And so I'm sure there's people in the audience now hearing about your expertise, hearing about your journey and your story, would love to be able to connect with you to be explore what are the possibilities of how they can engage with you. So can you share with us a little bit of how people can connect with you? Should they get inspired by what they heard here to reach out and find out?
Yeah. If you're a business owner, you want to go to managemoneylikeaboss.com. That's going to take you to my landing page on my website with the book. And then I do also have a membership group for creative entrepreneurs where we have training monthly. We actually have two trainings, one by me, one by a guest expert on all areas of your money and how it impacts your business. So, so if they want to go there, if you're not a business owner, that's okay too. If you just want to go to my main website, christinelukin.com, my blog has a ton of great articles, podcasts, videos. And you can also find out more about coaching there if someone wants to work with me one-on-one.
There's a link that you shared on ConvertKit. What is that? Is that your landing page?
That's actually a little free gift. It is the seven ways to increase your business income this year. Seven ways to increase your business income this month.
Okay, this because nobody's that patient to wait a year. They want it now. This is the world we live
right
in.
Right now.
So I'm going to...
30 days. Very easy things that people can do. I would say probably at least four or five of them are going to apply to anybody's business to help them increase their cash flow this month. And who doesn't want more money in their bank account?
Right. Exactly. I mean, if you're not, then you're not our audience. I mean, so you're not... I don't even know why you're on the show right now. No, just kidding.
Because we were talking earlier and we both said, I love money.
I know. And you know, and to be able to congruently say that and not have any weird foibles or like, you know, like, because, you know, that's almost like a real simple exercise. You know, everybody go around the room and say, I love my stand up and announce that I love money and see how you feel. Because if you're feeling all funky and weird, then guess what? It may not necessarily work. Right?
We probably got a money story we need
I
to
got a money story
cover.
we got to knock out. So very cool. So for those of you who are listening, you can go over to the Spreaker.com station where we have it posted there, and all the URLs, Manage Money Like a Boss, ChristineLucan.com, 7 ways to increase your business this month, and just click on that link. It's free. Definitely take advantage of it there. And that way you can use that opportunity to connect with Christine on a deeper level. So thank you so much, Christine. I really appreciate you. If there's one last thing that you want to leave for the audience who's like saying, oh my God, I want just a little bit more. What is one thing that you could leave with and one little gemstone that'll just kind of like knock it out of the park for them going, oh my God, that was the best.
So here's what I want to say to all entrepreneurs. You plus money can change the world. If you can get your relationship with money straightened out, your impact is just going to be amplified. Mm-hmm. It's going to be crazy. I want all of the big, kind-hearted, generous, creative entrepreneurs to understand that hand in hand, them plus money, they can change the world.
Yeah, you're like the female version of me, because I say the same thing. I mean, the entrepreneurs are the problem solvers of the planet.
Yes,
we
absolutely
submit ourselves to the crazy because we believe in a higher purpose of solving some problem that this world needs.
Yes.
Right. And so I love that. Entrepreneurs plus money equals massive impact.
Yes.
Perfect. I mean, couldn't ask for a better way to end it. I have chills all over my body for that. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for that. That was amazing.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and I look forward to it. Let's chat a little bit of debrief afterwards to talk about next steps. But thank you again so much for coming on. And ladies and gentlemen, we're top of the hour. That's our show for this week. Again, if you found this episode to be valuable and know of someone else that could benefit from what we talked about today, and if you don't know anybody, just share this video everywhere because it can, it will. There's so much good content today. And make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes or give us a thumbs up on YouTube Live. We even have a Facebook group called The Money Lab. So join us there to dive even deeper into these concepts so that you can help break through your money blocks. Okay, so very, very important. Anyway, that is a wrap. Have an amazing week to applying the knowledge from today. We'll catch you next week on the Money Lab Live podcast, where we have financial freedom blueprint sensei, Damian Lupo. This is Wei from the Six Figure Academy and Christine Lucan from Manage Money Like a Boss, author of that, signing off.
Your money make a world go round.